Coming to you on some serious tape delay via a podcast near you. From that hockey hotbed of San Jose, California, it's Dudes on Hockey.
He is now accepting callers. He is calling me Dude.
And now, your hosts, Mike and Doug.
Hey there, and welcome to Dudes on Hockey, episode 80. I'm Mike, that's Doug.
Dude, how was your Christmas?
Dude, it was great. It's very merry. I didn't do anything too exciting. It was just a family affair. Stayed local, didn't do anything too exciting, but very restful and relaxing vacation.
I hope that everybody saw the photos that I posted from my Paula Deen Christmas Eve.
Wow.
Yeah, yes. Dude, I had quite a tummy full of delicious fried goodness. I made my first Christmas dinner. I'm quite proud of myself. I stuffed the turkey, if you know what I mean.
Nice, dude.
And I did a good job, dude. I think the wife and I did a very good job and turned out some stuff. Dude, give me the rundown on the important thing here. Mm. What did you get?
I got some hockey videos.
Oh, hockey videos.
Yeah.
What does that mean?
I got a video on the night.
You're talking like Jay Woodcroft's like scouting video of the Edmonton Oilers?
No, although I would like that. If anybody has that, I can use that for Christmas next year. No, I got something called Forgotten Miracle, which is about the U.S. winning the 1960 Olympic Hockey Championship against Russia. You know, obviously in reference to the 1980 championship, which everybody knows about. Well, they won in 1960 and beat Russia when Russia was an equal powerhouse at that time. So that's a good one. And I got a video about pond hockey. It's cool. I got some, you know, other random crap, but that's some pretty good stuff. Got a lot of things. I got a Sharks woolly, which
nice.
I wore to the game tonight.
That's so nice. Very nice, dude. Yep. I got to tell you what my favorite gift was. I did get a Mississippi River Kings jersey.
Nice, dude.
But I got to tell you, dude, the best gift that I've gotten so far, and I'm almost all the way through it, is Theo Fleury's book.
Oh, really?
It is good.
Yeah.
It is compelling reading, dude. I tell you, this guy has had one messed up life.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he says some crazy stuff about people who are still playing in the NHL.
Really?
He has some stories about playing in San Jose.
Wow.
He has a story about Mark Smith.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Does that sound interesting to you?
Yeah.
That's good because I got it for you for Christmas, dude.
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 I'm
Merry
so excited.
Christmas, your own copy of Theo Fleury's
Playing with
book.
Fire.
Dude, you're going to like it.
I'm so excited. Yep. Thank you, dude.
If you listened to the podcast last week, you'll remember that Mike caught me with my pants down. Not really, literally, but he sprung a little pre-Christmas dude Christmas on me. I wasn't quite prepared, but now it's here.
Well, we'll talk about your gift and its time in action a little later on in the show. But first, we have to talk about the game tonight, Washington. I sort of asked myself earlier in the week, is this the most challenging, the biggest game for the Sharks yet this season? Certainly close. It's up there with the Washington games, the Chicago games, because Washington is on top of the NHL in points. So, Sharks, that's a pretty good win, I'd say. The second beatdown in 2 years in San Jose against the Capitals.
Yeah, I was really pleased with how the Sharks play tonight. And I think, you know, Capitals fans will point to a lot of things as far as reasons why it didn't go well for them. I mean, they made a major trade this week. I mean, they traded away their team captain. They traded away one of their top six defensemen. And, you know, I watched them play against Carolina earlier in the week, the day that trade was made, and they looked really disorganized and kind of out of sorts. And I thought they looked like that for the first two periods tonight, too.
Yeah, me too.
They kind of came on in the third period, and Ovechkin decided to just sort of take the game over on his own at one point. But I don't quite understand. Like, I've only watched the Capitals play a couple times, and they're about the middle of the pack as far as shots allowed, but we seem to be able to shoot from anywhere, anytime. And actually, I'm going to look this up as we're talking about how many missed shots the Sharks had tonight, because they missed the net a lot.
They did.
But this game could have very easily been like 7-2, dude.
Yeah, it could have been, as big as the one last year, because it seemed, especially on the kill, they really collapsed a lot. They gave the Sharks a lot of room on the perimeter to pass the puck around. They really collapsed the size of that box. Usually when you got four guys on the kill, they stand almost in a box formation, two forwards up at the points trying to stop the passes across, and then two defensemen low, one guy usually in the slot, one guy not. But that box was very small, and it seemed like Boyle had a lot of room to move at the point. We saw Pavelski at the point tonight. He had a lot of room, and there was a lot of tip plays. There was a lot. Their PK did not look good to me.
Their PK
all.
Is not good. It's 19th in the league at 80%.
No kidding.
You consider that ours is number two.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for an elite team to have a PK that's that poor, for Washington fans, that's got to be a concern, especially for a team that, I mean, they're a big team. Really big. I mean, I kind of forgot about how large a lot of their players are.
Yeah.
But it doesn't seem like they have a lot of speed. They do on maybe in their top six, but, you know, they really have some kind of slower guys.
They don't have a Torrey Mitchell.
No, not yet. But I think the trade that they made and what they did is they traded, you know, their captain, Chris Clark, and they also traded who as a player has maybe limited sort of Todd Harvey-ish type worth, you
right.
know?
Yeah.
I mean, but then also they traded Milan Jurchina.
Yeah.
How do you say his name?
Jurchina, I think.
Jurchina. Who's a decent defenseman, you know? I mean, sort of, I guess... they're Kent Huskins, if we may be so bold as to say. Boy, we had a Kent Huskins lover behind us tonight.
We really
this
did.
Guy. Oh, man.
Every time Kent Huskins was out there, the guy would say, Kent Huskins, all breathless. Very strange.
I know. It was very strange. Do you ever watch the show Home Improvement?
Yes.
Yeah. But do you remember the name of the show that Tim Allen was on?
No.
Tool Time. Oh. That's what was behind us tonight. Tool Time. Those guys.
I'd like to think maybe they were starting a new magazine called Modern Jackass.
Anyways, enough of picking on our peers. I don't know. I wasn't very impressed with the Capitals' effort tonight, dude. I know it's just one game, but they're missing their number one goalie is where I was going. They're missing Varlamov. He's down having a conditioning assignment. And they seem kind of out of it, you know, as far as chemistry went. But hey, good win, and certainly, I guess their philosophy was give the Sharks any shot they want, and if you can't stop them, pull them down on a breakaway.
two penalty shots, and the Sharks converted on both. Ryan Clough went to his what can now only be described as the Ryan Clough move, which is the backhand roof shot. Which I gotta say, it's a damn good move.
I just don't understand how people don't know that's coming now. I guess you do know it's coming. You can't stop it?
You can't, because sort of the trick to that move is right before you make it, you have to open your blade so that it doesn't look like you're stick handling anymore. It looks like you're ready to shoot. And if the goalie doesn't respect that, then that's the five-hole shot right there. If he starts moving when Clough makes that move, then Clough's just going to shoot it right then. But no, he moves to the backhand, and he gets elevation on that backhand shot so quick. It's just... It's
a great move, and I'm got to say Joe's move was pretty darn good, too. I was a little bit surprised that he scored on that, because usually in the shootout, he looks a little lost in a one-on-one situation. I wouldn't have been shocked if he started taking it down the middle and he just passed it to nobody on the shootout.
Passed it to the ref.
He's like, oh, man, I just didn't know what to do if I couldn't pass it.
Yeah, I think he made a good choice, just rip the shot. You know, he's not a guy that's going to make a bunch of moves in tight.
No,
just shoot the damn thing, and he ripped it high and went in. So that's
it's funny how when you're one of the best players in the world, you can do that.
Yeah,
it's how convenient,
kind of amazing. But anyway, so Washington, another, you know, a good win against Washington, another good win. We didn't get to record before the Chicago game last week, so let's talk a little bit about the Chicago game. You know, that's a game, frankly, I didn't really think the Sharks should have won, but they did. And
well, they're outshot 47-14.
Right. But I think that number was a little bit misleading. It was almost like the Sharks of yesteryear when they would just shoot from all angles. I mean, there was a lot of unscreened outside shots on Nabby, and, you know,
so it was quantity, but not quality.
Yeah, there wasn't. There was some quality. Don't get me wrong. There definitely was, but I wouldn't say all 47 of those shots was the difficult to save type. It was a lot of, you know, Mike Greer kind of, you know, throw it on net and see what happens.
It's certainly playing with fire when you've got, you know, you've Patrick Kane had 8 shots. Keith had 6. You know, Seabrook, 5. Bufflin, 6. I mean, you're asking for it if you're going to let those kind of players shoot away like that. And certainly, I was very nervous when Hossa scored with 2 minutes left.
Oh, yeah.
I definitely felt like, oh, here we go, you know. But Nabi came up huge. He was great. They didn't quit. They played really hard all night. And I agree that the shots didn't quite tell the whole story. But after the game, I texted you.
Yeah.
And this is how I feel still. It's a perfect example of how the Chicago Blackhawks, they're not going to win a cup with Cristobal Huey in net. He was so beatable high. Mm-hmm. So beatable high. And the Sharks, they shot high all night. They only got 14 shots. They scored on 3 of them.
Right.
And he looked bad on those goals. Like he just got beat. Demers beat him.
Yeah. Demers Thornton beat him bad. And there's a lot of open net when
all
Demers
beat
made
them.
That shot.
They beat him high every time. So that's the book on UA, dude. And I just think when a goalie's that predictable, a good team's going to figure it out.
I don't know, man. Chicago is number one in the league in shots allowed. They give up the least amount of shots, and they are also number one in the league in goals against.
And they did a great job. They only allowed 14 shots. It's too bad the loser in net let in 3.
Yeah, I guess you're right. But the one good thing I thought the Sharks did in that game, like you said, they stayed in it and so forth, but they were pretty outplayed in a lot of parts of the game, but they did have a really good penalty kill. They were 7-for-7 on the kill. It seemed like Chicago, with all those great players they had, never really had a consistent possession in the zone. They didn't have, you know, great chance after great chance. The Sharks did a good job of blocking lanes and clearing the puck and all this kind of stuff. A lot of the times, stuff that we give the Sharks crap about, well, they did a really good job against Chicago, and it definitely paid off because, you know, 7 power plays against Chicago, you don't want to do that. So that was...
6 wins in a row, dude.
Six wins in a row.
I feel like we were just sitting here lamenting how the Sharks had dropped 5 in a row.
Yeah.
And now they've won 6 in a row. A team of streaks.
It is. It's very streaky.
Do you feel like what's your kind of general assessment of, do you think this is a reflection of the team kind of turning it around? Or do you think that it's a reflection of having Anaheim in there twice and Dallas?
Yeah. Well, Dallas isn't that bad, but it's maybe a little of column A, a little of column B. I think all 5 of those losses were by 1 goal. And what, 3 of them were in overtime or 2 of them? 2 of them were in overtime.
3
in overtime.
3, so, St. Louis, LA, and Dallas.
So barring a couple of bounces, some of those would have been wins. So this seems to be maybe...
Well, we were leading in 3 of them.
That's right. So a couple bounces aside, this would be more or less, it could have been going the other way for these past 6 games. So... I didn't like the Phoenix game this week. You know, Anaheim and Phoenix. The Anaheim game, you know, I wrote a blog post about it. It's just not as satisfying anymore to beat Anaheim because they're just so bad. It's just, it's like the team has just suddenly lost its way in the space of 5 months. It's ridiculous.
Well,
I know you have a theory on this.
I think that, well, we saw today, and we're going to get into Team Canada. They got 3 guys who made that team.
Yeah.
You know, you've got Niedermeyer, you've got Getzlaff, and you've got Corey Perry. They're all going to be on that, and Bobby Ryan's going to most likely be on Team USA.
And Jonas Hiller's going to be playing for Switzerland.
So you've got a lot of great players still on that team. But when you gut the identity of a team, basically, by trading, they had arguably the best third line in hockey with Moen, Niedermeyer, and Paulson.
That's right.
And all 3 of those guys are gone.
Mm-hmm.
One was let to walk away, and the other 2 were traded last year for, you know, spare parts, really. You know, we saw one of those spare parts in action in Stockton, but we'll get to that in a second. So when you basically keep your star players, but then you try and redo the supporting cast, I'm trying to figure out what Murray's up to here.
Mm-hmm.
And this is my other prediction. I think that Randy Carlyle is going to get canned.
Really?
And I don't think he deserves it.
No.
But I think that what's happening here is that Murray's trying to remake this team into something else, not into the, you know, sort of in-your-face style. I think he wants them to be a little more up and down. And that's not Carlisle's thing.
Yeah, and they don't have the horses for it.
Not right now.
Yeah. If you got Todd Marsh on the second line or whatever, you know, not always he's on
their
the second
line. Their third and fourth lines now are bad.
They're not good.
They're not good. They're not productive. And that's what made the Ducks so difficult to play. You really didn't have a break against them. We saw they just wore us down last year.
Mm-hmm.
And now, I mean, they're just sort of easy pickings. They've got the talent to win on any night, but just certainly not a tough draw like they used to be. Yeah. You don't dread it. You actually kind of look forward to it.
Well, the tough draw now is Phoenix.
Yeah. Dude, I think tomorrow night's game against Phoenix is a bigger game than tonight.
Really?
Yeah, because we have had such a hard time with them.
That's true.
And it's been a really bad matchup for the Sharks. They clogged the neutral zone. They put so much pressure. I mean, talk about the anti-Capitals. I mean, the Capitals tonight gave us all night to shoot, whereas Phoenix, you feel like you get the puck, they've got to rush it.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have the time. And Phoenix has been awesome at home this year. They've been really, really good.
They've won 10 in a row.
So, you know, if the Sharks can go in there tomorrow night and win 3-1 or 4-2, I think you can circle that as the best win of the season, dude.
Wow.
They need to really focus on burying Phoenix tomorrow. Because Phoenix, you know, dude, I mean,
they're not far
they're
behind.
Right there. They're 4 points behind us right now. So L.A., talk about dropping off the map.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
From when they were tied with us now, they're a full 10 points back. I still think they're going to catch up and pass Phoenix. But
the way Phoenix is playing, I'm getting less and less sure.
Jeez, dude. I'm just not a believer that they're going to be able to keep this up. But I don't know, dude.
Tippett's got them believing that they can win.
Yeah, he sure does. They believe that they're in it. For sure.
Yeah.
And when you've got a great goaltender, anything's possible.
That's right. And Brizgalov is a great goaltender. Certainly, I enjoyed the Nabby and Breezy head-to-head matchup here that we saw. And we're going to see it again tomorrow night. A little intra-squad Russian goaltending head-to-head stuff.
No. Grice is playing tomorrow.
Yeah. No chance.
No chance?
No chance. I think no chance.
Wow.
This is a must-win game. This is a game the Sharks lost the previous two meetings. They had a two-goal lead in the third period, gave it up, and only managed to win in the shootout.
It's the perfect night for Grice.
You think?
Yeah.
I think you put like Grice on Saturday against Edmonton. That's when you play Grice.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah, nice.
Anyway, let's move to the next topic, dude, because we have so many. The next is Stockton Thunder.
Fire!
That's right.
Dude, we made the long drive,
mm-hmm.
the hour and a half pilgrimage to Stockton.
That's right.
We piled in the Toyota Corolla and we navigated the treacherous terrain of Livermore. That's right. And then we made it all the way to Stockton, dude.
We did.
Yeah.
And we had some dinner.
We
some
did.
Steaks.
We went to a restaurant there where you order at the meat counter.
Nice.
You're looking in the window and mm-hmm. you get to pick the steak. I want that one.
Mm-hmm.
Give me that one. And anything that comes with a baked potato with bacon and onion rings is good for me, dude.
Yeah, that's a good meal.
It's good for me. And then we had a few adult beverages.
Mm-hmm.
And the bartender was very generous.
She was.
Yes. And then we made it over to the Stockton Arena, dude. And what was your overall assessment of the ECHL experience as a fan?
I enjoyed it very much. I thought the experience was good. I thought the hockey was good. Not great, obviously. I mean, this is a, you know, a league one down from the Worcester Sharks, one down from the ECHL. So, you know, this is the second minor league team for the Edmonton Oilers is the Stockton Thunder. I can't remember what their AHL team is, but so we're, you know, I was watching some World Juniors this, you know, yesterday and today this week.
Right.
I would say the ECHL is a step down from the World Juniors. The World Junior guys, you know, they make some mistakes too, of course, but they seem to be able to execute certain plays a little bit better than the ECHL.
Well, these are the best junior players
in the
world.
The best 18-year-olds there are. And ECHL, you know, you got the gambit from prospects maybe who have taken a little turn for the worse to guys coming up to career minor leaguers. So they have a lot of heart. You know, they're trying hard. This isn't like a beer league hockey thing where people are sort of skating around. Although I do notice that you see guys do a lot more flybys, like when they miss a puck or they miss something, instead of the stop and start that you see every NHL player do, which takes a lot more effort and strength and you know, stamina to do, these guys will sometimes just miss, circle back, and get back into play. Mm-hmm. So, you know, little things like that you see. You know, the passes aren't quite as crisp. They don't receive passes quite as well. They don't really take advantage of the chances they get. And in one case, they have really, really crappy goaltending.
Oh, my. And yeah. By a former Sharks farmhand.
That's right.
Timo Pielmeier last night was... he was, as they say... balls. He was not good, dude.
No, he was not.
He gave up some of the worst goals I've seen in a hockey game, period.
In a while. Period. Yeah. Outside of my league, yeah. And he was one of the guys that the Sharks traded in the Travis Moen deal. So I'd say the Sharks got the better end of that particular exchange, because looking at Pielmeier, I mean, he is, you know, he's not getting out of the ECHL ever. The way, if he keeps playing like
he's playing like that.
Because the first three goals were weak, really
none,
weak.
None chance, dude. None chance. The thing about the Bakersfield Condors.
Right.
I mean, not to not talk about our team, the Stockton Thunder, which is our clear allegiance is to them, because we were there rooting for them. Looking at the Bakersfield roster, I mean, they're just kind of stocked with guys who've been drafted in the NHL.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm looking at their top seven scorers, and six of these guys have been drafted by either Montreal. I'm seeing, you know, there's Anaheim's top pick from 2007. Logan McMillan is there. Having a terrible season, 6 points in 30 games.
Ouch.
But he was a first-round pick, 19th overall. They've got Sean Weller, who was an Ottawa Senators pick. They've got Sasha Pokulok, first-round pick in 2005 by the Capitals, number 14 overall.
Wow.
You know, and some of these guys have fallen all the way to the ECHL, but this is basically the Anaheim Ducks farm team here.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, their goaltenders, they have Timo Pielmeier, an NHL prospect, and they've got Justin Pogue,
who used to be the guy on deck for the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Yeah, he's played, you know, a handful of games in the NHL, mm-hmm. and now he's played 9 games at the ECHL level this year.
Ouch. Yeah, yikes. That hurts.
That does hurt, but I think you're right, dude. The quality of play was entertaining. The fans were great.
Yeah.
Really into it. Seemed fairly knowledgeable.
Yeah.
A lot of Sharks jerseys there.
Yes.
Even though they're the affiliate of the Edmonton Oilers, there were certainly more Sharks jerseys there. And I'll tell you one thing that certainly looked better than at the Tank, the food.
Yeah.
The food, the concession stand food, it looked legit.
Yeah.
It did. It looked good. The nachos actually seemed to have real meat on them.
Wait a minute. You sure?
Yeah, dude.
Wow.
No, I mean, I didn't look at now the buffet that was up in the Comcast Club was not the same. But overall, dude, would you say that you would return?
Absolutely.
To the Stockton Thunder.
And I mean, they really drew. I mean, they drew 7,800 people or something for this game.
It was packed.
The arena holds 10,000. You know, I read Sharks page religiously, and I always read the Worcester Sharks recaps, and I believe the fact that I know that the Worcester Sharks play in the DCU Center is a little bit scary, but I know that. And I think the Worcester Sharks only draw between 2,000 and 3,000, so I mean, I believe that this is one of the best drawing ECHL teams in the league. So they have some pretty diehard fans, a lot of Stockton Thunder jerseys, a lot of people decked out in the Thunder regalia. It's pretty nice.
Good stuff, man. Good stuff. And a good win over, you know, one of the best teams in the ECHL.
Yeah.
So if you're ever jonesing for some hockey and you feel like making the drive,
or you're just in the Central Valley and you need something to do.
Yeah, check it out. Check out the Stockton Thunder, dude. And we will definitely be back. Maybe we'll have a little dudes on hockey pilgrimage.
Yeah.
We could all head out there. We could get a luxury box.
That'd be sweet.
Have some nachos with some real meat on them. Mm. We can all get Stockton Thunder jerseys.
That'd be fun.
Yeah. A former Sharks affiliate player, Craig Vallette.
Oh.
A member of the Stockton Thunder.
Nice.
Did you know that, dude?
I did not.
Oh.
Well, the more you know.
The more you know, the wiser you are.
That's right.
Go Stockton Thunder.
Next up, Olympics, dude. Just announced the Canadian national team. We have most of the other countries. I can't think of anybody now missing except for the U.S. So our dreams came true, I guess. We saw all four of the Sharks that we thought might make the Canadian team make it. That would be Joe Thornton, Danny Heatley, Patrick Marleau, and Dan Boyle on defense. So the Sharks have a, not to put too fine a point on it, a crap load of Olympians.
They do. They have seven right now, potentially eight if Joe Pavelski makes the U.S. Olympic team, which I think we're all expecting he's going to, although you could ask Shane Doan that nothing's a given.
Yeah. So there's quite a couple of interesting choices, I thought, on the Canadian Olympic team. And if
who do you think was the biggest snub?
Jay Bouwmeester. He's been to the Olympics before. I think he's just as good of a player now as he was the last time they went. And they went with Drew Doughty, which I totally understand because Drew Doughty is a beast and he's playing awesome. But they went with Brent Seabrook, and that's the one choice I didn't quite get. Because I understand you want him to play with Duncan Keith, and they're a pair, and so on and so forth. But, you know, Bouwmeester and Seabrook are not on the same level, in my opinion.
Well, if you're looking at the reason why maybe they took Marleau and Thornton and Heatley,
right,
it makes sense if they're planning to just play them together. Mm-hmm. Why break up a good thing? Why break up, you know, arguably the best line in the NHL, you know, that could just go out there and just continue to have chemistry? There's not like they're going to have to figure out how to play with each other.
That's right.
You know, so if you kind of look at Iserman's thinking here, I think, okay, he's got Niedermeyer and Pronger. They're going to play together.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about that.
Although they didn't play together that much in Anaheim.
They're going to play together.
Okay.
All right. And then you've got Seabrook and Kane.
Keith.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah.
Keith. And so then Dan Boyle is going to be partnered with Shea Weber.
Yeah.
Sharks dream blue line.
Yeah, all right, totally.
So, and then I think their thinking is, okay, what if we're not going to have Bouwmeester in the regular rotation, then let's bring Drew Doughty. Let's mm-hmm. get him some experience. Let's get him here. We'll throw him in against Slovenia or whatever and
yeah.
let him play a game. But otherwise, he's the scratch.
Andrzej Kopitar plays for Slovenia, by the way.
Good for him. Then he'll be the one who's scratched.
Yeah.
Instead of Bouwmeester being scratched.
Right.
I think that was the thinking behind this dude, if I can go inside. I mean, he took Corey Perry and Getzlaff. You mm-hmm. know, I mean, I think he's taking guys who have a history of playing together instead of trying to mishmash four new lines.
Right.
Which is really what the U.S. is going to have to do.
That's true. That's true. So the one question that we're going to have to continue to ask ourselves, and we're not going to be able to answer until after the Olympics are over, is how is this going to affect the, you know, individual teams from which these players are coming from? You look at the Sharks, you said seven Olympians if Joe Pavelski goes, because Nabby's playing for Russia, and now we heard in the last week that Douglas Murray was named to Team Sweden. So
that's awesome.
Much congratulations to him.
Thomas Greiss is playing for Germany.
That's right.
He's backing up Dmitry Patsold.
So that's 4, 5, 6, 7. So we could be eight.
It's going to be eight.
Could be eight with Pavelski. The only other team I can think of that could be close to eight Olympians is Chicago.
Hacks.
Because we have Keith and Seabrook.
Right.
We have Taves on the Canadian team.
Kane will make the U.S. team.
Kane will definitely make the U.S. Hossa is on Slovakia.
Whatever country he's from.
Yeah, I'm terrible.
Paulson is on Sweden. Yes.
I think that's right. Bufflin could make the U.S.
Uh-huh.
So how many is that? And
Isn't Huey playing for France?
I don't know. Do they have an Olympic team?
No, they don't.
Okay.
I don't think they were good enough.
And I think it's just him.
They stunk. Sorry.
But that's a lot, too.
That is a lot. Dude, I've got two questions here for you about the Olympics. One, if Canada wins the gold, which, mm-hmm. you know, by all, you know, reason to believe they're the favorites, right? Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Is that a good thing for the Sharks based on the fact that you're going to have four guys that are probably going to be a major part of that success coming back and feeling awesome? Or is it just not, doesn't matter?
I think it could help. I don't know how much, though. I don't think it's going to be like a huge boost.
Well, I mean, Joe Thornton, has he been a winner before?
I'm sure he's been a winner with like the World Juniors and the World Cup or something.
Okay. But, you know, to win an Olympic gold medal,
that's big.
Patrick Marleau?
Yeah. That's
okay.
Huge. Yeah.
It's huge. Dan Boyle, okay, has won the ultimate cup, right? He's won the Stanley Cup. And Danny Heatley's been part of some, you know, medal winning teams for Team Canada. But the two guys you always are pointing the fingers at, like Marlowe and Thornton, these guys are not winners.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if they can come home winners, that might lighten up the load a little bit, dude.
I hope so. That's an interesting idea. Didn't think about it like that.
Here's my second question for you.
Mm-hmm.
Is it a terrible thing that the Calgary Flames, basically, some of their best players are just going to be sitting around getting healthy and waiting for the regular season to come back?
Yeah. I mean, they got their two best players, Ginla and Kiprusoff, will be there. But you're right. None of their defensemen were sent. People said Robin Regier might be named to the team. Of course, Phaneuf is left off, and now Bomeister's not there. So they really only got two guys. I still think they got a problem scoring. So I don't, you know, I don't think it's like the biggest deal that they're sitting at home.
I'll tell you who I think the biggest omission was on the Canada team, who does not have a problem scoring. Mike Fisher, baby. Carrie Underwood. I would have taken him on the team just to have her hanging around and giving private concerts.
That guy could score.
Yeah.
All right, dude. We still have plenty more to talk about. We're almost out of time.
What?
Next, World Juniors, dude.
Yes.
Mentioned a little bit before.
I've kind of been half watching.
I hope everybody's been watching World Juniors, but we got an interesting email from Robin talking about a Sharks prospect named Marek Videnski.
Yes. Plays for the Prince George Cougars in the WHL.
That's right. And you did a little research on him. So he is playing in the World Juniors, is he not?
He is. He is, actually. You know, this is a guy who was drafted in the 7th round by the Sharks. You know, kind of a low-risk, high-reward pick. A guy who plays for Slovakia, I think.
Yeah.
And that's where he's from. But this guy is, in Prince George, he's their leading scorer. He's playing on a line with a guy named Brett Connolly, who's a name that everybody should remember. He's going to be a top 10 pick in the NHL draft in 2010. He's been pretty banged up this year. He did not make Canada's World Junior team because, I think, mainly because of injury.
Mm-hmm.
But this guy supposedly is going to be a real gamer. And now that he's back, he's on the top line with them. Videnski has 5 points in 3 games. In the first 3 games
of
the
World Juniors. Yeah, nice.
And if they beat Switzerland tomorrow, they're going to probably make it to the quarterfinals and then get hammered by, you know, the next team.
Yeah.
But it's an opportunity for maybe people who have the NHL network to maybe tune in and check out. This guy's a big kid. If he's playing with, you know, top line talent, this might be a dark horse that Doug Wilson is going to sign this guy at the end of the year. Because when Couture comes up, they're going to need someone to fill in for Worcester in the playoffs.
Yeah.
So I think you got to kind of keep one eye on Marek Videnski.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe we'll have a chance to watch him in the quarterfinals and we can talk about him in a little more detail.
Well, thanks for the heads up, Robin. We'll definitely keep our eye out for Marek Videnski.
Yeah, he's not even in the top 18 prospects on Hockey Futures for us.
Really?
He's on the list of some of, like, other guys, like buried next to Daniel Rahimi.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, so not getting a lot of love
as
far as that goes, but he might surprise some people, dude. I'm excited for his future.
Me too. Okay, next email from Chris, Wings fan in Sharks land. He says he's developing a drinking game where they watch hockey, and one of the rules is that you have to drink a beer each time someone hits the post or crossbar. That being said, is there any way to determine the average number of times the puck hits the post or crossbar during the game?
That's impossible.
It's possible.
What?
I did it, dude.
Dude.
I found out.
You're like the Willy Wonka of hockey stats.
I am.
Who can make a puck clink?
That's right. So this, for those of you that are continuing to listen this far,
all
I am announcing the first contest to get your very own Dudes on Hockey t-shirt.
Nice.
So here's the thing, okay? How many posts and crossbars have happened so far in the NHL? I tabulated through the first 576 games of the 2009-2010 season.
So you're talking about, in total, how many posts and crossbars have been hit this season?
This season.
Up to today?
Up through Tuesday. That's when I did it.
All right. So for the people who are going to actually try and figure this out.
If you actually crawl the sites and stuff, that's cheating. You have to make an educated guess. This is like the contest they have it at the Tank, where they bring the people up and they say, you know, how many times have Joe Thornton scored on a Thursday, and you got to make a guess.
So whoever's the closest wins the shirt.
Whoever's the closest wins the shirt. So send your answer to questions@dudesonhockey.com.
You can respond one time.
You can respond one time. You know, just you make a good guess.
And we'll announce the winner on
next podcast.
So you have to have responded by next Tuesday.
That's right. Next Tuesday at, we'll say, 3 p.m. Pacific time is the cutoff.
Ooh. Okay. So specific.
Well, you know.
We're moving up in the big time, dude.
You got to have rules. But here's your chance. We met a fan today at the game.
Great guy. Hey, I know Scott's probably listening right now. He works the graveyard shift. Great guy. Thanks a lot for listening and supporting us. And we've got a box of Kleenex here for you because this guy, he was so moved by meeting us. He cried like Semenov.
He cried like Mike Schmidt did when he was inducted into the Hall of Fame.
this Theo Fleury book, he talks about crying all the time.
Really? Oh, but anyway,
dude, I can't wait for you to read this.
We're giving Scott a shirt. You know why? Because he took initiative.
Yeah.
He took initiative. He's like, I want to meet you guys and I want a shirt. And he's like, I'll do what I need to do to get a shirt. Well, guess what? You don't have to jump through hoops to get a shirt. We give you a shirt. But now the bar has been raised.
Oh.
See, now you can't just email us and say, I want a shirt. We're going to give it to you. Now you have to come up with something new.
I like it.
It's not the same. So first way, easy way to do it, win the contest. Second way, surprise me. Think of something good. Maybe we'll give you a shirt. Maybe not, but you know, I want.
You're such a tease, dude.
I want creativity.
I like that.
I know our listeners have creativity, and I want to bring it out in them. Well, dude, I think we're running out of time. Is there anything else in the world of hockey that we should be talking about right now?
Matthew Schneider on waivers?
Yeah. You know, my curiosity was a little bit piqued when I heard about Matthew Schneider on waivers.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a guy that was a big part of the Ducks winning the Cup. I mean, he's a number three defenseman. He's this guy that we heard EJ talk about, oh, we need a guy in the right slot. And I thought, is Matthew Schneider this guy? Well, he's 40 years old, and clearly the Vancouver Canucks don't think so. So now I don't think so.
Yeah, I don't think so either. I think there's got to be something wrong if he's not able to play the minutes that they're interested in having him play. I mean, I haven't looked at the numbers to see when he's been in there and what he's been playing. He hasn't been extremely effective. We don't know. Maybe he has a problem with Alain Vigneault.
Maybe.
You know, maybe there's a problem there. I mean, he was excused from the team, basically, so
they said, get out.
I don't know, man. I'm not interested in taking on that kind of money. Yeah. And when you claim him on reentry, it's only half, but you also only get half the carton of Ensure that comes with him.
Yes.
So, we don't need another 40-year-old defense. We've got one. Yeah. That's plenty.
Yeah, you're right.
Plenty, dude. Trying to think of other stuff. Dude, the hottest team in the NHL right now is?
The New Jersey Devils. Am I right? They've been winning.
You know, as soon as I said that, I realized that closed up my... Hold on. Dude, the hottest team in the NHL is...
Dude, dead air here.
I'm asking you.
It's radio. I said New Jersey Devils
you're
already.
Right, son of a bitch.
All right, that does it for this week's Dudes on Hockey. I'm Mike, and that's Doug. You can email us at questions@dudesonhockey.com, and we'll be back again next week, same time, same place. And most of all, Happy New Year.
The hottest team in the NHL is...
The New Jersey Devils?
Son of a...
Think the show sucks? Want to get your questions on the air? Email questions@dudesonhockey.com. Dudes on Hockey is not affiliated with the San Jose Sharks organization or the National Hockey League.